Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line if you got any questions about the Canucks or whatever you want to talk about. Brendan Batchelor joins us now. We go to the phone lines. Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650. Thanks for taking the time, Batch. First question. How would you feel about being in the seat in front of Thomas Drantz on an airplane?
I would love that opportunity because I would drive Drantz crazy the whole flight by reclining as much as possible, and then maybe I'd pull it up a little bit just to give him a bit of hope and then take it away again by reclining again, and have a lot of fun with that for sure.
Do not try. Do not try to best me in a pettiness competition, my friend. You might visit hell occasionally, but I was born here.
Yeah, we were joking about this yesterday. You're plain Bane. You were born in the darkness and molded by it.
Yeah, let me honestly, I'm just going to read the exchange with your permission.
Yeah, of course.
So Batch texts me while we're on air yesterday and says, I would politely tell you to expletive delete it off if you ever ask me to unrecline my seat on a plane. And I said, and I would make sure to hit the back of your seat accidentally at the precise moment that you appeared to be falling asleep. To which he replied, and I would make sure to stand up and take extra long getting my baggage out of the overhead bins at the end of the flight just to make you wait longer to get off. And I said, that's fine. You're waiting too. You want to stay in hell with me? No problem, brother. I was born here.
Well, my whole take is that you are perfectly within your right to recline your seat. I don't think there's any sort of etiquette that demands that you not recline your seat. And in fact, I think people that do think that way, feel entitled to space that is not theirs. If the seat can recline, that is your space to use. And if the person behind you doesn't like it, they can either recline their seat or they should have paid for the upgrade so they didn't have to deal with it.
See, it's a relic, though, of when we used to have sufficient space, right? And people have like left it there because if you're feeding people trash, you know what I'm saying? The one thing you need to make sure that they still have is like the slightly better version of trash so that people can be like, I'm not a trash eater. And you're just falling for the man's trap. We're all uncomfortable together and you have an option. Do you want to add to someone's discomfort or do you want to accept? Like, are you going to take that extra inch and add a little bit of aggregate discomfort for very minimal benefit, by the way? There is no benefit comfort-wise to reclining a half inch or not on an airplane. Zero.
Oh, I strongly disagree with that.
As zero.
You think there's a benefit?
As someone that loves to sleep on airplanes, having a little recline is so important because otherwise your head's bobbing forward or tipping onto the person next to you. Whereas if you can recline, you can get your head back a little bit. Like, that's very important.
I think you just do a window seat if you plan on sleeping, because then you can like put your head to the side, then you don't have to worry about the recline.
Oh, the window seat is always the play for sleeping, but the recline does help. It makes a difference. Sometimes like your seat isn't lined up perfectly with the window, so you can't do a nice lean to the side. All in all, I just think it's a situation where we can recline. Everybody go ahead and recline, especially if you see Drantz behind you, make extra sure to recline. And you know, you can recline as well, Drantzer, as well. You can create that space for yourself. So
I wouldn't do such a
thing.
It's a
world that we can all live in.
I have standards. This is not a world we can all live in. I just want to note, in discussing this with the wider Canucks media pool, the only person that really agreed with you was Farhan Lalji. So for our
listeners, who is a much more well-traveled man than I.
So
I'll defer to him on this one.
I just want to let our listeners know that if you side with Batch, you also side with Farhan. The reviews are coming in, by the way. And Unbearably Stupid Radio right now texts in one listener, wasted segment.
Yeah. So that's every segment,
so,
buddy.
So why don't we get down to business? Batch, what do you feel? How do you feel about a team threatening a player with a no trade clause with going on waivers as a workaround to make them more amenable to accept a deal?
I love it because it's incredibly entertaining for us to all watch. And as long as the team is within their rights to do it, the player negotiated the contract that he has. Jacob Trouba does no longer have a no movement clause. They're fully within their right to do that. Now, you know, what could the fallout from that be in terms of their reputation around the league being hurt and, you know, it impacting whether people think twice about signing with them in the future? That's another conversation we could have. But this is not the first time we've seen this done. And ultimately, if the player wanted to have full control over the way that this was handled, there should have been a no-move clause negotiated into his contract for the duration of the contract. So, you know, it's not like they said, you are going on waivers. We are just leaving you hung out there to dry. They gave him the option. They said, okay, you can waive. You know, these are some of the teams that have been involved. What do you think? And all reports are he slept on it and then agreed to waive to go to Anaheim. Like, I think that's a perfectly fair way to deal with this situation. And it's like, you know, like offer sheets. Like, offer sheets are a legitimate way to sign players in the National Hockey League, and we don't see them used anywhere near as much as I think they should be because of the, you know, perception of a code or it being sort of underhanded tactics to sign an offer sheet. Whereas in my mind, as long as it's legal under the CBA, as long as it's, you know, meets the terms of the contract that was signed, then it's on the table and, you know, it's entertaining to watch and entertaining for us to analyze as well.
The ability that the Rangers have had to get out of Gaudreau and Trouba and actually get like assets back in Trouba's case, I mean,
wizardry is what I would call it.
Right. Have the California teams just let Chris Drury off the schneid here? And why?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question.
Chris Drury, California, the state of California is to Chris Drury as the city of Chicago is to Patrick Helvin.
Yeah. The Ilya Mikheyev trade.
And Beauvillier. And Beauvillier. They got assets for Beauvillier at $4.5 million.
Although they did have to give up assets for Jason Dickinson. So it's not a complete track record that was good with the Blackhawks.
But, yeah, but they needed that cap space. You're right. They got off of Jason Dickinson through Chicago's.
They gave up a second round pick for that, didn't they?
Yeah, and Jason Dickinson was better than he was in Vancouver. I mean, Jason Dickinson is not a poor enough player at $2.6 million to warrant giving up a second rounder for, but the club used that cap space pretty well when you consider that, like, that basically pays for Ian Cole last year, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's worth it, even if you can second guess the cost.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, Chris Drury has photos of the California teams in compromising situations, and that's why he was able to make this work. But, I mean, Barkley Goodrow was in San Jose before, was he not? So that was probably a guy that they had familiarity with, knew the kind of person he was, knew the kind of player he was, wanted to bring him back. And based on, you know, comparing how the Blackhawks season is going to how the Sharks season is going, I think you can probably say that some of the moves that Mike Greer has made to bring in some of those kinds of players have helped stabilize a team that was absolutely horrendous last year. And I know I'm talking about this in the wake of them getting blown out by Tampa last night, but the larger sample size sort of proves that point. The Anaheim one, I'm very curious about. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me unless, you know, they see an opportunity with a very young team that's really struggling to have a leader like Jacob Trouba come in and sort of steady the ship and show the way for some of their young players. But, you know, unless the expectation is that Jacob Trouba is going to sign in Anaheim long term, I don't understand the acquisition from their point of view as well, except maybe to sort of try and help stem the tide of a season that's going south by bringing in a guy that can play some bigger minutes on the back end than some of their guys are capable of doing for them right now. But, you know, I don't have an explanation for it, but, you know, credit Chris Drury for getting the job done here, because those are two really important trades, and now they've got all sorts of flexibility, and it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah, them and the Dallas Stars both getting a whole ream of flexibility, you know, in short order over the last couple of weeks is going to only inflate the prices, right? Because those teams have deep prospect pools and now a ton of cap flexibility to use in sort of spending it. What's interesting to me about this batch is very, very quietly, the Ducks have been playing really good hockey for 3 weeks. Now, I know how quiet it's been. No one knows it. But that,
yeah, exactly.
But they might be the sleeping giant California team that for some reason no one's paying attention to. Like, everyone's paying attention to San Jose, partly because San Jose plays way funner hockey. But over the last 11 games, San Jose's 5-4-2, right, for 12 points. The Anaheim Ducks, 5-3-1 across their last 9 for 11. Like, they're playing better hockey than the Sharks. So it's weird to me that they'd shake it up right at the moment where they seem to be performing. I'm so confused by this.
Well, unless you think that going out and acquiring Jacob Trouba is like a reward or an incentive for your team based on how well they've been playing, that, look, we've got this guy who hits like a truck. You know, maybe he isn't as big of an impact player as he once was, but on that Anaheim team, he's going to be a big difference maker for them, I think, in terms of what he's able to bring. But again, like, that could be a short-term rationale. The long-term rationale for giving up a young serviceable defenseman in Vaakanainen and giving up a pick to bring in Jacob Trouba doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, unless Jacob Trouba is going to be there for the long haul rather than for the, what, year and a half that's left on his contract. So I guess we'll see how things play out, and maybe he does sign an extension in Anaheim on July 1st and that answers that, and then you can look at it and say, okay, they wanted a veteran guy to come in and lead the way for some of their youngsters. But in a vacuum right now, I don't really understand it, and I guess we'll have to see how it plays out.
I can see, though, if like in the next year and a half you retain half the salary on Jacob Trouba, I could see a bunch of teams around the league being like, yeah, we'll give you a first for that right-handed defenseman that hits a bunch and can probably make an impact in the playoffs, good leader. Like, yeah, that's to me maybe the angle I could see them taking. But maybe you're right, maybe it's a kind of leader for their room, and they're looking more at an extension.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong quickly. He still has that no trade list in his contract until the end of the contract, right? That doesn't change. So if that is indeed the case, then as much as that could be an option for the Ducks, that's still a process that Jacob Trouba is going to control largely with, I believe, a 15-team no-trade list right now. So, yeah, it's possible, and maybe that's sort of the conversation that's happened here is, we'll work with you, we'll try to do some salary retention and flip you either at this year's deadline or next year's deadline and get you to a place where you have a chance to win, but ultimately a large part of that situation is still going to be controlled by Jacob Trouba based on the fact that the Rangers had to threaten to put him on waivers essentially to get this deal done.
Yeah, it goes to a 12-team no trade list after this season, but you know, it's pretty hard. Like, 12 teams doesn't cover all the non-playoff teams, because that's one thing players do, right? You throw all the teams that you think are bad on your modified no trade list, because those teams aren't going to be buying a vet anyway. Right? That's a good way of gaming it. But I don't know, 12 team, it's probably not robust enough to fully protect him. Anyway, whatever. He gets to live in Newport Beach for at least a year and a half. It's pretty nice.
Good for him.
Well, unless he goes at this year's deadline, and then it might be like a month and a half. I guess we'll see.
Oh, poor guy. What do you make of Demko coming back and backing up?
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of it. It's interesting because you would think, generally speaking, that if the guy is ready to play, then put him in there and let him play. But this could be part of a ramp-up process, right? He goes through a full game day routine. He goes on the ice for a pre-game warm-up for the first time, gets more comfortable. And then, you know, I guess the afternoon game on Sunday is an interesting one. I don't know how to read whether it's likely that he returns in that game or not, but I think the only way to interpret it is that this has been a gradual ramping up process, and they have elected to go with this step to ramp up and say, you're going to dress, you're going to be available, you're probably not going to play, but hey, you never know. Crazier things have happened. We all remember Chris Levesque and him almost getting thrown into the game for the Canucks many years ago. So there is the possibility that Thatcher Demko plays NHL minutes tonight. But I would expect that it's a ramp-up process, and then either we look to Sunday and the afternoon game against the Lightning, or Tuesday and a night game where he could get another full game day routine in, get multiple practices in between now and then, and feel a little bit more comfortable before actually starting and preparing to play a 60-minute game.
What do you think is more likely? Because there's two scenarios that I outlined in trying to think my way through why they would approach it this way. The first is this shows tremendous confidence in Demko's physical recovery, right? That obviously the club feels pretty strongly that if he had to go in cold, there's no risk to that. That's one read on why it's being approached this way. The other is Demko's ready, but they actually just want to play Lankinen. Coach's decision, Lankinen is the guy tonight. Which do you think is more likely between those two?
I think the first of those two options is most likely. I think you don't dress a guy if you're not 100% confident that he would be capable of going in. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, this has sort of been an ongoing conversation with the organization. And, you know, we heard about the lack of practice time on the road. But you might have the exact date on this, Drance. I don't off the top of my head. But he's been practicing with the team for a good long while now. It's not like it's just been a week or two. Like, he was participating, albeit sharing a net mostly with Artur Shelov's, even before they went away on the six-game road trip. So I would say that this more than anything shows confidence that they feel he is ready to go. And then, you know, what the conversations might be beyond that in terms of whether he starts, whether he backs up, I'm sure those are made in consultation with Demko and with the coaching staff, and they need to all be on the same page and understand the plan going forward here. But that's how I would look at it, is you don't throw the guy in just to back up if you're not 100% confident in his ability to go in cold, because it is a realistic possibility that could happen tonight, albeit not a massively high percentage. But guys get hurt in the NHL. It happens all the time, and Thatcher Demko might have to play this evening. But the fact that they are content with him backing up and risking the chance that he has to go in cold makes me think that they're very, very confident in where he is physically right now. And that's an encouraging thing out of the way that this has been managed, I think, if you look at him backing up tonight rather than starting.
I do agree it's encouraging, but again, it just kind of feels, I guess it feels weird to me, because if you're that confident in him coming in cold, this does kind of feel like the game we all looked at as the soft landing spot for him, where it's Columbus is playing their third of 3-4, second half of a back-to-back, and though they've been kind of pesky and plucky this year, they're still the Columbus Blue Jackets, and they're not the Tampa Bay Lightning or any of the more formidable teams are going to play on this homestand. So I guess it just feels weird to me that if he is ready, that you wouldn't just be like, hey, you start this game. Does it say anything about the confidence they have in Kevin Lankinen and maybe the need to win a game to start a homestand based on what their home record has been this year?
Yeah, that's the part of it that leads credence to the other argument that Drance was mentioning about it being coach's decision. Is Lankinen's the guy that's been rolling. You've just come off a good road trip. You've built some momentum. You really need to get a win at home to start the homestand, because if you don't, the questions that you're already being asked before this game about, you know, why have you been so good on the road and why have you struggled at home, those ramp up even more. And then you've got the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are a pretty good team that will make it tough for you on any night or any afternoon whenever you're facing them coming in on Sunday. So, Demko talked yesterday about how well Lankinen has played and how that has relieved some of the pressure for him, because it's not like he's sitting on the sidelines watching a goaltender struggle or watching the team struggle. They're still getting results and Lankinen's playing very well for them. And so that's all encouraging. And maybe that has allowed them to be a little bit more cautious. And that might be what's allowing them to choose to start Lankinen in this game tonight. But, as much as a December Friday game against Columbus on the same night as a Taylor Swift concert can be an important game, I think this is an important game because you want to start the home standoff on a positive note against a team that you should be beating in a situation that you should be beating them in, where they played the Edmonton Oilers last night. And so thinking about it from that perspective, maybe you understand why, as much as this would be a quote-unquote soft landing for Demko relative to some of the other opponents they have, certainly compared to the Tampa Bay Lightning on Sunday, I do wonder if a part of this as well is, We just need a win. We just got to start the homestand off well. We've got to build off the momentum on the road. We've got to, you know, shrug that weight off our shoulders about being asked all the time about why we're not better in our own rink. And then after that, we can look ahead and figure out where to get Debco in.
Reading between the lines of Tockett's answer, do you expect him Sunday?
Yeah, that's such a tough one. The way Tockett sort of couched it was, we're going to practice tomorrow and then Demmer and I will talk after that and we'll figure it out. So I guess without knowing what Demko goes through on a day-by-day basis in terms of whatever recovery he has to get, however he has to ramp himself up to be ready to go out there, whether it's for practice or potentially for his first game, I don't really know, because it's possible that Demko wants a morning skate. Demko wants the opportunity to go through whatever process he feels he needs to go through to have his knee ready to play that night. And if that's the case, then it's unlikely that he would play Sunday against the Lightning, because it's a matinee game and you're just waking up and going to the rink and playing. On the other side of things, for a guy that, you know, has been out for a long time, and I'm sure a large portion of what Demko has had to overcome here is mental as well as physical, it might be better for him to just get up, show up at the rink, and play, and not have to think all day about what it's going to be like when you actually get into a game. So I could, honestly, it's a coin flip for me in terms of whether we see him play against the Lightning. And I didn't think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm interested to see what you think, Trancer, but I didn't think that Tockett tipped his hand one way or the other in terms of which way they might be looking against the Lightning for the Sunday afternoon game.
I thought the framing, like at this point, the framing of where we'll chat after practice, like if Demko's backs up again, and so because we have to read into this, he's ready to go. He's ready to go. So if it happens again that it's coach's decision, Lankanen starts, to me that's fascinating. I expect Demko to go Sunday as a result.
Yeah, I could see it that way. And
it's,
you know,
too loaded for him not to, in my view. That's how I'd see it.
And I guess there could be a conversation here about how the team feels and how the goaltender feels and needing to sort of align those two things before you're ready to put him into the net. But you're right. The fact that he's dressing means that he's capable of playing if he's called upon tonight. And so I would say that unless they're just waiting for Demko himself to give the go-ahead and say, all right, let's do it, then I would expect that he probably starts on Sunday as well.
Where this gets really interesting to me is if Lankanen puts in like a 34-save performance in a 2-1 Canucks win that everyone says they probably weren't the better team. You know, that's where it's like, oh boy, how does the club navigate this one?
Yeah, and the other thing I think is interesting is there's no conditioning stint here. Like they haven't even considered sending him down to the AHL and getting him a game just so he has a game before you know, going this route. Like if you think that he's good enough to back up and you think that he's ready to go, would you not rather even send him down and get him a period or two in Abbotsford just so that, you know, you can be sure from your side of it, he can be sure from his side of it, and you go from there? You know, that's kind of interesting to me as well. But yeah, the more you talk about it, the more you convince me, Trancer, that it would be probably more of a story if he doesn't start on Sunday as opposed to if he does, regardless of the fact that it's a day game, unless they just come out and say, look, we want to give him the best opportunity to have success going back in. We don't think the day game offers that, and essentially announce that he's going to start on Tuesday before the game on Sunday, which I guess is also theoretically possible.
Batch, you've put in a good shift. Go ahead and recline that seat, buddy.
Oh, I'm going to right now. Thank you very much. Have a good one, boys.
Thanks, Batch. There's Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. It is Canucks Talk. On the other side, we're going to hear from Rick Tockett speaking to media today ahead of tonight's game against Columbus. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Strands here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Strantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And you can text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. A highly optional game day skate for the Vancouver Canucks today as they get set to take on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at Rogers Arena at 7 o'clock. Bear in mind, Taylor Swift concert. Be prepared. Make good choices. There's going to be road closures. Be ready for them. But Rick Tocchet spoke to media after the game day skate. Here he is.
Rick, can you start with your starting goalie and your backup goalie tonight?
Yeah, Langston and Demers going to be backing up tonight. Yep.
Will you practice with the or play with the same lineup you practiced with otherwise?
The lines wise? Yeah, be the same lineup as in Mitty. Might put Sass in the middle. Might be the only difference. But
with Sass in the middle, I mean, you guys have struggled a little bit in draws since Nine left your lineup, right? I think it's 42.2%.
Sure.
Yeah. Is that part of your thinking? Do you just need a spark there?
No, it's kind of the draws. I think Ratzel continue to take draws. It's kind of a hybrid thing, but I just want to try Sass in the middle. I think he can give us some pace up there, and Rats played wing last year, so it's kind of a hybrid thing.
Will you keep three goalies around for a while, or is Artie going to get sent back?
We'll talk about after the game tonight. You know, we can't have him hang around not playing, so you know, we'll talk to Patrick and then have that plan. But you know, most likely he's got to get some games down in Abbotsford. But we haven't talked about it yet.
And I guess if Demko is the backup, I mean, you're always a knock away. Like, he's now good to go then.
Who's right? That?
Demmer.
Yeah. Yes.
What do you think that means just to the group to have him in uniform for the first time all season?
Well, I think him traveling with us the last couple of road trips, he's a leader on the team. He's a different type of leader. You know, it's just him being around. He's just a glue guy. The guy works awfully hard. I mean, he's spent a lot of time by himself working out. He's there at 7 a.m. working with one trainer. So I think what it's contagious to me is the hard work he does. Like, the young guys see this stuff, that how dedicated he is. So I see that really helps our locker room.
You're probably in game at a time mode, but with the Sunday game being an early game, yeah, is that a logical game to play Demko, or maybe wait till he can have a normal game day with the pregame for an evening game?
Well, we have a practice tomorrow. I'll talk to Demmer after practice, and we'll go from there. If it's the next game or the next game after that, we're not quite sure. I'm going to talk to Demmer, but I definitely want to get a good practice more than talk to Demmer about it.
How about
Milsey? Like we said yesterday, we have a plan. So stick with the plan, and I'm not going to tell you the plan, but there's a plan.
Is there a chance to practice with the team tomorrow?
I don't think so tomorrow, but in the near future.
What about Petey and his game right now? I mean, we've talked a while about him getting his game back. We saw some of that on the road trip. Do you feel he's close to that now?
Well, he's the moments, right? That's what I like about him. He's coming up with moments. You know, we still, you know, it's like, you know, like everybody, we're trying to squeeze more. We need more from everybody, but I think he's coming up with those big moments. You know, Detroit, nice backhand to Branson, 3 minutes left. You know, him and Jake have really had some big moments. So, you know, getting the puck on the power play to the net where Jake's, you know, he's not deferring as much. You know, things like that. The game is all about these moments, and I think we're getting moments from certain individuals.
Did he have to learn to manage his game differently, given the kind of, just Petey, just the way to manage his game, the way to play? Did he have to change something just somehow teams were checking him?
Well, I think his approach to the game, mental aspect too, he's really worked on. We've talked about it a lot. You know, you guys know me with moving his feet, you know, wanting the puck, shooting the puck more, things like that. And I see glimpses of it and chipping away at that. He's got to stay with it, though. You know, practices, I think his practice habits have gotten way better the last 2-3 weeks. And it coincides with your game. You know, it's just, there's no secret.
DeBrus mentioned capitalizing on today's game when you have a team like Columbus on a back-to-back. What is the key to capitalizing on that?
Well, it's a mental game. We had 2 days off, from the road, from the East Coast, or Minnesota, or East Midwest, or whatever, but it's all mental. It's, like I said to him, even that sixth game on the road, why does the sixth game on the road have to be the hardest game? The guys want to go home. Like, it makes no sense to me. It's this mental thing, and it's a mental game. We play smart game into our identity, we have a better chance of winning. That's really what it comes down to.
What do you see out of this Columbus team? They're playing some pretty high-octane hockey, and that line with Monahan and the two young Russians seems to be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I remember last in Columbus playing them, and I was so impressed with their rush game, the rush, Marchenko, whatever. You know, guys like that. Johnson, I saw him take off a few times against Edmonton, had a couple breakaways. They're a really good rush team. We probably learned from playing Edmonton and New Jersey 2-3 weeks in here a month ago, when you play good rush teams, how we want to defend it. I think we'll be better prepared this game. But then, like I said, you know, we got to play to our identity. We like to keep the puck down low. A lot of pucks to the net, hopefully. Good forechecking. Like, that's what we have to do. You know, obviously we got to, there's a game plan against Columbus, but it's more about us tonight.
You're big on committees. We always hear you talking about the power plays go one right now. And without JT, I just wonder, has it been more of a committee approach? It kind of feels like, you know, Besser to Garland at the back door in Buffalo, Hughes from distance the other night. Like, are more guys maybe getting involved in the committee approach on the power play right now? Or?
Yeah, I think we've been trying to start the training camp of that, the theory of attacking mode. You know, a little bit of puck luck's happened, but at least we're attacking. Like, you know, we're beating pressure. You know, like, he sees a 2-on-1 at the net. He's throwing the puck on the net. Maybe last year we're deferring a little bit to the flanks. Now it's, you know, when you play teams that have the diamond, I mean, you got to get the puck on the net with two guys in front. That's really, I always say, it's not sexy, but it works, right? So, like, the tic-tac-toe stuff is really hard nowadays, and I think that, you know, Hughes is really taking it upon himself, saying, man, he's actually told the guys, hey, there's a 2-on-1 if I'm shooting, so don't ask for the puck. I like that attitude.
There is Rick Tocchet speaking to media today ahead of tonight's game against the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Vancouver Canucks, revealing the if Quinn Hughes is on a 2-on-1, he is going to shoot it. So I hope other teams didn't hear that and that there's no 2-on-1 for Quinn Hughes tonight. But he might just rip it and score, so it's fine.
The invocation of puck luck on the power play, I thought was fascinating. Asked DeBrusk too. I actually butchered the question. If you hear the audio, but was asking DeBrusk too about how all his goals are coming at the net front, and he mentioned all the things that have to go right for those goals to line up.
Yeah.
The idea of the puck sort of following him around of late. The truth of the matter is that the Canucks miss JT Miller on the power play. You're just not going to see it in the results. And I thought Tocchet noting how fortunate the club has been 5-on-4 is like an important note that the coach who runs the power play directly is well aware of this, right? The Canucks have scored 6 power play goals in their last 6 games. And I guess Miller also missed the Rangers game, but I believe they scored one in that game too. So it's been a good, like a purple patch for the team from a goals perspective. Yeah, they scored 6. So they scored 6 in 7 games without JT Miller. But they've also had 38 minutes of power play time and taken 30 shots total, right? So that's less than a shot a minute. Not exactly where you want to be. And only 94 attempts per hour. Or sorry, 94 attempts period. So that's, oh man, it's even worse than that. It's 56 attempts, sorry. So they are struggling to generate, but they are getting heavily rewarded, shooting 20% on the power play. So
yeah,
they're definitely very lucky at the moment to be on this run of success. DeBrusk been driving a lot of that personally at the net front. I think he's done a great job. I'm not taking anything away from it, but I just thought it was interesting that the coach is so aware that they're running hot like that. I am seeing a lot of talk, right? Inevitable talk. You get the like, oh, you know, this team's been playing better of late, or the power play has sorted itself out. People have stepped up in Miller. Like, no power play in the league gets better losing a distributor and just an intelligent power play thinker like Miller. His absence has actually been felt on the power play. It just hasn't matched up with the results, in part because of the puck luck that Tocchet addressed, noted directly. I just found that to be one of the most like most insightful answers that he gave in that availability was talking about the power play in particular.
And it's a good sign that he's aware of all of that, right? Because I do feel like some fans, and credit to them, like it's you see the goals going in, you're like, hey, the power play is playing fine without JT Miller. Like this is things are going okay. And well, I mean, yes, they are getting the results like you outlined. The amount of chances aren't really there. And you're right. It's when you have someone like JT Miller, who is such an elite power play player, your power play isn't going to get better when he's out of the lineup. It might play okay. It might tread water like it is right now. And you're still, again, getting the results. But this is like it's better when JT Miller is there. And I know some people are like, well, Elias Pettersson is touching the puck more. And like he's I just think that's a matter of Elias Pettersson playing a bit better and maybe being a bit more direct, like Rick Tocchet mentioned. To lose JT Miller is always going to be felt, especially on the power play. And like you said, I think it has been felt, but they just haven't had any unfortunate results come out of it, which is good. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in there. What have you, is there, like, do you, what do you think is the ultimate upside for this power play without JT Miller? Is this what it is, or do you think they could be playing better than they are right now?
On the power play?
On the power play without JT Miller.
So, I mean, it's just the same thing that has been true all year. They're just not efficient enough getting set up, getting through the zone and getting set up. Like, the big issue has been a lack of attempts. I actually think some of the individual looks are good. Tocchet praised the power play, as you just heard, at length for sort of simplifying the idea that Quinn Hughes is just getting the puck to the net front when you've got the two-on-ones down low. The idea that they have to play gritty, that's going to be how you manufacture goals. There's nothing that stands out to me. I think Besser on the flank has looked good. I really like Pettersson. He's narrower on the flank of late. I think that's been a good look. I like DeBrusk at the net front and really kind of think that he should probably keep that role.
I agree.
You know, at this point, I just... It's such an interesting one because I think Besser's value at the net front is as a playmaker, fundamentally. But if you're... game plan is to score gritty goals. I like DeBrusk's finish from in tight, and you know, with the way that you want this group to move, there should still be some down low playmaking opportunities for Besser if he's playing in the bumper with Miller back and playing on the flank. So you know, there have been elements that I actually think, like, I think the Canucks are playing good hockey on the power play for the most part. They're just not generating enough. They're not at a high enough gear, and Miller helps them in that area. Although, frankly, for large swaths of the season, even Miller's inclusion on the power play hasn't helped them drive that. They're just not getting set up quickly enough. They're not sharp enough through the neutral zone, and that's why. And that I think remains the biggest issue, and really it's been an issue all season.
And that has felt like the issue, and you're right. It was something that was there when Miller was in the lineup, and it's persisted while he's been out of the lineup. I do agree. I've liked Jake DeBrusk in that front, and like DeBrusk said, it's like, hey, you need to have puck luck, especially like if you're a net front player, sometimes the puck just isn't going to bounce your way. It's been bouncing his way lately. Obviously on the road, on this road trip, he has had a hot streak. We'll see if it carries over because he hasn't had the same success at home, but we'll see what he's able to do for the Vancouver Canucks. Hopefully continues clicking with Elias Pettersson and on that power play moving forward. Canucks taking on the Blue Jackets tonight at 7 o'clock. But before we continue talking about that, we will go to the phone lines. It's Nathan Kanter, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Giants. Appreciate you taking the time, Nathan. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, guys, so much for having me on.
No problem. It's the beginning of a 3-3 tonight for the Giants, starting in Tri-City and then Portland Saturday and Sunday. A couple of those Teddy Bear Tots games, by the way. How important of a weekend is this for the Vancouver Giants?
Yeah, no, it is a huge weekend for them, for sure. It's a tough weekend. It's the first 3-3 road, all three in a row. The good news is the Portland, at least, you're only traveling right? You get Portland and Portland again. So you're not traveling a third time for that Sunday afternoon game, but it's a crucial weekend because, to be honest, it's been a November that I think they wanted to put behind them, and they did start December great with a big win over Seattle. And then, Regina comes into town on Wednesday and you outplay them significantly. I think they had a good game. There was no, problem with the effort, but you got goalied, right? Kelton Pye made 38 saves on Wednesday. The Giants end up losing to a team that had struggled, that has struggled big time this season. So that was a little bit of a letdown on Wednesday. So you're coming into a weekend against, two American teams. The Tri-Cities actually having a really good season. They're 18-6-1. They won 12 in a row earlier this season. They're beyond that. They're past that long winning streak. It ended a couple of weeks ago. So they're 5-3. It's winning 12 in a row. But, I mean, any team that wins 12 in a row, it's a pretty good team. They're third in the conference. And then Portland, you don't know. They're not the Portland of last year. That's a good thing for the Giants because last year Portland went all in. Really hard to win in that building. It'll be two straight and a busy one. And they're playing a couple of teddy bear toss games in opposition buildings. So tonight and Sunday, you're going to try and, delay that first goal as long as you can because it's the teddy bear games in those two buildings. So, yeah, it's a crucial, crucial weekend for the Giants, and it won't be easy. So we'll see if they're up to the task.
Yeah, it's teddy bear season for major junior hockey. Do you think the Michael Misa suspension for going Grinch during a teddy bear toss game, is that something WHL players and coaches and teams are discussing in terms of making sure everyone avoids shooting the bear back into the crowd?
It's a fun time of season. It really is great. The Giants should, they have their teddy bear toss game at home next Saturday. Victoria Royals will be in town. It's surprising the Giants haven't played Victoria yet once this season. They'll finally get them for a back-to-back next weekend. But teddy bear toss is great. Of course, you see the clips of, when Calgary and Edmonton have it. It's full NHL buildings, and that cleanup takes a while, I'm sure. I saw Calgary's video of that, of the teddy bears, getting whatever it is, 18,000, 19,000. So, it's a fun time of year. I do know... I think it was tonight I was chatting with the Tri-City Americans broadcaster, Craig Boschman, and saying he knows that there's, I think, a 4-foot teddy bear that someone's going to be bringing to try to get that. I don't know how you get that over the glass, some of these stuffed animals. So it's just a fun time of year. It's great. It's a thing that junior hockey embraces, and the kids have a lot of fun with it, too. And we'll see who will be the teddy bear toss goal scorer. Last year, it was Jaden Lipinski for the Giants in a crazy game against Everett that ended up 8-7. So for now, you got to try and spoil the fun. Next week, the Giants will have their fun on Saturday at the LEC.
Yeah, so that's Saturday the 14th against Victoria at 7 p.m. And then a little bit later in the month, a Star Wars night, Stormtrooper uniforms in every Vancouver Giants players' stockings this holiday season. That's December 29th versus Kelowna. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the all-white Stormtrooper jerseys here that the Giants are preparing to wear later this month?
Yeah. Stay tuned for there will be some video teases, and of course we will reveal what those jerseys look like. But yeah, it's the Stormtrooper look where it's white jerseys, white socks, and then of course you got a pant shell, so it's going to be white over the pants. So it's not like it'll be white and black. It's the Stormtrooper look. It's all white. It's Giants did this a number of years ago. So a similar look to that when they had it. I think it was one of the first years at the LEC they did. So I'm a Star Wars fan, so I'm biased. I know a few of the guys on the team actually asked to be in the shoot, because they are Star Wars fans, and a bit of a promo shoot that we shot the other day. So that'll be out shortly, but it'll be a lot of fun. It's also a Sunday game, so I think that'll be good because Sundays typically, you can get a lot of kids out. There's still a post-game skate for all the kids to join the team after, and I think when you get something like a Star Wars game, that's great for the families, and the team can have fun with it too. So yeah, I love the theme jerseys. That's part of, I think, what makes junior hockey great, is seeing some of these wacky, odd jerseys. Later in the year, Nickelodeon Night will be back. So it was SpongeBob jerseys last year for the Giants. This year it'll be a different theme that will be revealed later. And so, yeah, that's those kind of games, those kind of odd jerseys. I think it's a lot of fun for the players and for the fans.
It is Nathan Kanter, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Giants. There's a couple Giants approaching some milestones here. Mazden Leslie, he's a few points back of Bowen Byram for third in all-time Giants scoring, four defensemen, and Connor Levis, 2 points away from 200 in the WHL. What can you say about those two players?
Yeah, I mean, for Mazden Leslie, like, this guy, he's named their captain this season. He's dominating in terms of he plays in all situations on the top pair with Ryan Lynn, and he's always out against the opposition's top lines. And he's just, you know, he's worked on his defensive game a lot over the last couple of years, right? He was a couple of years ago, he put up 50 points, but, you know, his play away from the puck, sometimes that decision making was, you know, questionable at times as a younger player. And now he's really, he is their, you know, leader on the ice, playing in all situations, doing everything, offensive zone, defensive zone, and leading on the ice, really. So he's going to have a chance here at the all-time games played record. Like, this guy doesn't miss games. This guy plays. He plays hard, and 144 points as a defenseman is tremendous. He played as a 15-year-old in the bubble. I really like the way his game has grown. I think he's having a tremendous season. He's got 26 points over point a game. He's a defenseman this year, and he's still got another year left next year as a 20-year-old. So, yeah, Leslie's been fabulous. And Connor Levis coming over in that trade last season, you know, he's been good for the Giants, and I think there's still more there. So he's at 198 career points. A lot of those came with Kamloops when he was on some really good Kamloops teams. But now, you know, you need him to lead offensively for the Giants. And this season, he's been good, but I still think there's another level there. There's another gear that he can take it to. And he has more points than anyone on this Giants team. So he's 200 from 200. He's got like 50 more than any other Giant. It's hard to hit 200 points. It's hard. It's a lot of points in this league if you're going to hit 200. So good for him to be closing in on that. And I expect him to do it this weekend. He's got three games to do it, so I'm sure he will this weekend. They're going to need him to show up if they're going to get some results.
Hey, Nathan, really appreciate you taking the time, and looking forward to Teddy Bear Toss Night for the Vancouver Giants next Saturday against Victoria.
Yeah, thanks so much. Hope to see you guys out for Star Wars Night, too. I hope to see you there December 29th.
There is Nathan Kanter. Kanter, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Giants, and like we said, Giants Teddy Bear Toss Night, Saturday, December 14th, against the Victoria Royals, and then Star Wars Night for the Vancouver Giants, Sunday, December 29th, against Kelowna, breaking out the all-white Stormtrooper uniforms.
I have to say, they have the best jerseys in the WHL.
Hopefully they shoot more accurately than the actual Stormtroopers on that evening.
True. Good call. They do have great jerseys.
40 shots on goal, zero goals, right? Like, that would be the most Stormtroopers possible performance.
Honestly, just for the bit, it would be kind of fun. Before we go, Sportsnet and 650 and Barnside Brewing have dropped the gloves on a new pale ale that's perfect for hockey season. The brand new Five for Fighting Hazy Pale. This crisp and refreshing Hazy Pale Ale is a celebration of flavor and balance. Brewed with our own farm-grown hops, it boasts a delightful harmony of fruity and floral notes. Each sip hints at the juicy essence of a ripe peach, complemented by a soft, velvety mouthfeel that keeps you coming back for more. Four packs will be available starting December 9th at Barnside Brewing Tap Room, participating retail locations, or on tap at your local pub. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz on the other side. Dmitry Filipovich going to join us in studio on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio, and you can text in 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. We welcome in Dmitry Filipovich. Dmitry, how are you?
Fellas, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Looking forward to tonight's game for the Canucks? Giants?
Well, I'm looking forward to getting a live look at the Voronkov-Monahan-Marchenko trio. Been talking a lot about being excited about Columbus. I don't know that I'm selling a skeptical market, although Rick Tocchet discussed how dangerous they can be off the rush, even dropped a comparison to the Oilers and the New Jersey Devils, which obviously that's getting that's high praise. They're not that level of team attacking off the rush, but this is a team that's fun to watch and can do some damage.
They are second in the league in 5-on-5 scoring this season on a permanent basis. I think only the Capitals are scoring more efficiently than them. Some of that is certainly shooting percentage driven, but especially the top of the lineup, right? When they have that five-man unit of that top line with Monahan and Marchenko and Voronkov, and then the Rensky pair with Dante Fabbro, they're lethal. Like, you have to really look out for those minutes. I think you can certainly beat them in all the other minutes, essentially. But when those top guys are out there, they're legitimately a delight to watch.
The Dante Fabbro addition, like, I kind of had some expectations for him, but then he went to Columbus and I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. But he's been, like, legitimately good there.
And that was the final straw for the David Yurecek era there, because they essentially picked up Fabbro off waivers and immediately slotted him into the top pair right-hand shot minutes. Mm-hmm. And Yurecek was like, all right, that's enough. literally just picked someone up off the scrap heap and gave him everything I've ever wanted from you guys. But he's played really well. And another blow to the Nashville Predators that both him and Philip Tomasino, now playing in a top six role with the Penguins, are both having a bit of a resurgence and looking like the top prospects they previously were. Mm-hmm. And Nashville just desperately needs any sort of silver lining, and they just gave those two guys away for free, essentially.
Is that
woof?
Is that because they're like it just wasn't working in Nashville, or is it just this, like, hey, you got traded, you get a bit of a bump, and eventually they'll come back to who they should be?
Yeah, I think both guys were certainly talented. If anything, we'd already seen Fabbro in the NHL for a long enough time that I think he's probably not a true talent first pair defenseman, and it's more of a testament of how well Werenski's playing beside him than anything. Tomasino just never really got an opportunity full-time in Nashville for whatever reason. Andrew Burnett seemed to really dislike trusting and playing him, even last year in that series against the Canucks where they really could have used some scoring punch, and they just really were hesitant to do so. So I'm a believer in Tomasino actually being a legitimate piece for Pittsburgh. But yeah, change of scenery is always for young players. You never want to give up on a guy after just one sort of failed stint. And it's cool to see both guys kind of realizing their potential.
The Canucks face a Tampa Bay Lightning team on Sunday. We're expecting that they'll have Kucherov back and maybe Mitchell Chaffee too, because they need someone to be the fifth guy on the power play.
Of course.
I mean, I'm just all in on Tampa as like a team I like watching, period. That's just kind of it. I just find them a lot of fun, just given the stylistic contrast in their top six. But there's still some holes there. Where are you on the question of Tampa Bay Lightning, real contender?
I think they are. Like, if you look at just what they did this offseason, they're one of the only teams in the league that are both top 10 offensively in expected goals generated and defensively in expected goals surrendered or allowed. And so they're doing it at both ends of the ice. They've had a really bizarre schedule so far, where I think they've still played the fewest games in the league. They had their bye week early on, and then they just had another 4 or 5 days off prior to playing last night against San Jose, and they had the toughest schedule in the league as well. They've played all of the West teams essentially twice now. After they play the Canucks the second time, they'll have played the Canucks twice, the Jets twice, the Avs twice, and the Wild twice, and basically knocked off their entire sort of Western Conference elite matchups off of their schedule. And so I think they're going to really ramp up here. We saw both Brandon Hagel and Anthony Cirelli get recognition for the seasons they're having on the second line with their Team Canada roster selections. And so you've got that first line that's going to cook in the offensive zone. You've got this buzzsaw in Hagel and Cirelli that can play everywhere. And then they have a fourth line in Luke Lindenning and Sam McGiriginson's that essentially nothing happens whenever they're on the ice, where you can beat them as the third line. We do like Geeky, and I think he's got a lot of potential there as a rookie, but their wings there, they're playing Cam Atkinson and guys who really shouldn't be playing those roles. So I feel like if I'm the Canucks and Rick Tocchet, those matchups, especially at home, trying to punish that third line whenever they're out there is probably the way to go.
I do love the first line. Like, just loading up Jake Gensel, Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov.
It's pretty good. Yeah, those are three pretty good players who actually have very complementary skill sets as well. So I hope, just from an entertainment perspective, I'm not sure Tom has, I guess it's still too early because the Canucks are obviously playing the Blue Jackets before that, but we're not sure if Kucherov will be back yet, because he's missed the past two games, I believe.
For he is on the trip, though.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I think
it doesn't seem like it's a serious injury.
No,
yeah.
And the expectation, I think, is that he'll be back, which is great, because I love to see every puck bounce his way for some reason. 13 years getting every bounce. It's unbelievable. It's honestly so cool to watch him play. They faced the Blues on Tuesday. The Blues had actually a pretty entertaining game, I thought, last night against Calgary. I was into it. Weird ending, but a pretty fun game all told. Has there been a new coaching bump since Montgomery took over there?
Yeah, there has. I think some of it certainly coincides with Rob Thomas coming back after having missed about a month or so of games, and so you got to factor that in. But they're clearly just have more of an offensive punch now since the coaching change, where previously they were bottom 3-5 in every metric across the board in the offensive zone. At least now you're seeing some of that top talent atop the lineup, whether it's the Buchnevich, Kyrou, Thomas guys, or even the young guys they brought in from Edmonton in Holloway and Broberg, kind of have a chance to spread their wings and create. And so they're a good rush team. I think they can certainly counterpunch. Even watch that Flames game, though. The Flames had the puck for the majority of it. I believe the shots at the end were
But the Flames are actually good.
The Flames are incredibly annoying to play against.
Yeah,
this is one of our best takes so far this season.
Although I was way off on them being terrible.
We thought they might be the worst team in the league heading in, but then we were quickly...
Way to pivot, guys.
Listen,
we pivoted fast, though.
As new information presents itself, I think it's okay to take
update
an L.
Update your opinion, yeah.
Get on the early pivot, it's fine.
Yeah, and so they're a very annoying team to play against. So I'm not holding that against the Blues, but yeah, I feel like, you know, as soon as Montgomery got hired, right, they beat the Rangers at MSG, although that's not really a difficult feat these days, but then they destroyed the Devils as well. Yep. They've had a couple nice wins here. I think part of that is just that immediate coaching bump and sort of the gains you see from that. I don't think that's what they're going to be the rest of the season, but still, I think clearly Jim Montgomery is a good coach and they're sort of reaping the rewards of that.
Colton Parayko, surprise inclusion for many on the Team Canada Four Nations face-off roster. Where do you stand on Team Colton Parayko is real good?
I think he's good. I think I see why they did it. And I don't think it's because his GM is the assistant GM for the team. I think they're going to clearly viewing him in the role of he's going to play probably a third pair role, get all the D-zone starts, and just try and play against the other team's top guys. And he's still really good at that. Like, if you look at his impacts, he's 97th or 98th percentile in the league in terms of even strength defense. He's arguably the worst offensive defenseman in the league. I think part of that is because they just ask him to do too much. He has to carry the puck and bomb from the point. He's not going to do that for Team Canada. So I think from a pure specialized role perspective, he's a good fit. I think there's better defensemen that Canada left home.
No,
in terms of in a vacuum, Evan Bouchard. You can go on, right? I'd say even Mackenzie Weegar is a more versatile player.
I don't understand why you wouldn't bring Mackenzie Weegar as your seventh, given the fact that no matter what happens, whether you need a top, second, or third pair guy on the left or right side, Mackenzie Weegar is a perfectly good answer.
Well, Team Canada has zero risk tolerance.
That's
right, in terms of the profile of players they like, and I think that's why both Weegar and Bouchard, who we've seen in big moments, their mistakes compound into catastrophic ones that wind up in the back of your net. And I think just Team Canada has zero appetite for that, and that's why they went with who they perceive as safer options in Sanheim and Parayko.
Yeah, Parayko's interesting because you're right. There's not a lot of creativity offensively there, but his shot is so good.
But he shouldn't shoot it.
Well, not as often as he does.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating player. I'm still big on Team Colton Parayko rocks. I'm holding that Parayko stock.
Well, he was also the reason the Blues won the Cup.
Yeah.
For all the attention that Pietrangelo got for his production.
And for that Game 7 against Boston, which was, honestly one of the best games I've seen a defender play individually ever.
Yes, and Binnington's run there as well. The reason why all that stuff was allowed to happen was because Parayko just absorbed every single tough minute they had, and that freed up Pietrangelo to play that role, which he hadn't had the luxury of previously in St. Louis. And so I still think he's some form of that player. Obviously, it's been, 5 years or 6 years now since then, so he's not necessarily identical to that, but he's still got a lot of value.
My comp here, because I know the underlying numbers on Parayko are soft, but my comp here is 2014 Shea Weber, where it's he's not the guy, he's not the absolute ent that he was 5 years ago, but we're going to be talking about this guy being an effective defensive defenseman, an effective two-way defenseman, I think, through the life of his contract, which I think has 7 years left on it. This player type, giant, massive shot, smart as heck defensively. I feel like they age well. They tend to be super good for a super long time. There are things Parayko can do on a sheet of ice that just you can't teach and you can't replace.
And he's still in his physical prime in the sense you look at a lot of the NHL edge data or whatever. Yeah, like speed, he's like 99th percentile in terms of speed burst, in terms of distance covered on the ice. Like he's still a physical freak.
He can travel 200 feet of ice in 4 strides. I'm very, very confident of that. Canucks then host the Florida Panthers.
Your Florida Panthers.
My Florida Panthers.
Your Florida Panthers.
Okay. That Philly game, Philly coughing that up late.
Yeah.
To the point that Barkov had a chance to not want the puck in an empty net situation.
That is one of my favorite
ongoing bits.
It's his just sheer rage at the thought of scoring an empty net goal. Like he actively hates it. And so if for those of you that haven't seen it, please go and watch the highlight. It's him and Matthew Tkachuk skating down the ice essentially with an empty net.
Yeah. Tkachuk has a bad angle.
He takes one hand off of his stick and he just starts pointing directly at the net for Tkachuk to shoot it just to make sure that under no circumstances Tkachuk actually thinks about passing to him. And what we know about Matthew Tkachuk as a player is I bet he desperately wanted to pass it off.
For sure.
Because he much prefers to get the assist.
Yeah.
And so it was like this hilarious just duel between the two of like, no, I insist you take it, please.
They had a good old-fashioned Canadian standoff.
They did.
After
both
you,
guys
please.
Said sorry, yeah.
No, I insist after you. And then it escalates and actually becomes quite rude on both parties' behalf. I love it, too, because he got hurt trying to prevent an empty net goal. Yeah. Like, guy hates giving up empty net goals, will not stomach it even in game 5 of the season against the Ottawa Senators. Hates scoring in empty netters. Even if, like, Tkachuk's actually at a bad angle. Like, the pass is the right play.
Yeah.
And Barkov's just like, nah, no chance, buddy. I want nothing to do with that. That comeback, though, against Philly was kind of outrageous. Mm. Like, Philly self-immolating in a sea of undisciplined play is, like, classic Torts stuff, but the way that the Panthers played the 4-on-4 and then the OT, or sorry, then the power play was ludicrous. They are so persistent when they turn it up.
They also have that gear. They had a bit of a stretch maybe 2 weeks ago where they lost 3 or 4 in a row, got outscored by quite a bit. And then all of a sudden last week they lock in, they have that home and home against the Hurricanes. And they really seem to, especially in the second leg of that, like take it very personally to send a bit of a message and played one of their best games of the season. They destroyed the Leafs earlier as well. They had this comeback win on the road. Like it seems like they weren't very happy with the way they were playing previously and wanted everyone like to remind everyone that they still are the defending Stanley Cup champions. And I love that because there's something so cool and competitive about like being having that gear and then being able to essentially tap into it whenever you want. And so they're in that zone right now, and it's a pretty rough time to be playing them on your schedule.
We do have some breaking news from Kevin Weeks and Emily Kaplan being told that the Rangers have agreed to an 8-year contract extension somewhere between $11.5 and $12 million on the AAV for Igor Shesterkin. Actually, he doesn't say the name of who it is.
Oh, it could be Jonathan Quick.
It could be Jonathan Quick. I'm going to go ahead and assume it's Igor Shesterkin.
Kapokako, isn't he extension eligible? But wait, I thought the Rangers mishandling the Trouba thing would mean that no players want to play in Manhattan for the richest team in the sport. This can't be right. Why would someone commit to that franchise given the way...
Who would want to stay in New York?
Yeah, how they treated Barkley Goodrow.
I'm telling you right now, players are never going to be like, you know who I don't want to play for? The Rangers.
Yeah.
That is never going to happen ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Especially when you're offered the highest paid contract in NHL history.
Yeah.
For your position. Yeah.
No, that helps.
Yeah.
That helps. Okay. So that's that Igor Shesterkin. Should he be the highest paid goaltender in NHL history?
Probably just purely based on the fact that with the cap rising over the next couple of years, every big name is going to start sending. Yep. Like we've seen that in other leagues, right? That trickle down of like, it's just a different.
The biggest contract in history.
It's like, all right, well, compare it as a percentage of the cap to what it used to be. I think certainly he's the best goalie in the league right now.
Yep.
And especially with how poor they've been defensively and where they're trending in that category, they're going to need him more than ever. I also feel like we're deprived on an entertainment value perspective because I would have loved to see him hit the market this summer just because I can't help but feel like even though they don't really have the finances and it doesn't make sense, it seemed like the Vegas Golden Knights would have been somehow involved in this and it would have led to peak chaos.
Would have been so fun.
It would have been just outrageous and I would have loved to see what additional trades they had to make to accommodate that. So we're obviously deprived of that right now, but it seemed like a no-brainer that he was going to stay in New York.
So Dallas now has $10 million in cap space with Tyler Seguin hurt for at least the rest of the regular season. The New York Rangers just cleared a preposterous amount of cap space this year and next with the Jacob Trouba trade. A lot of teams we expect to buy with outrageous flexibility here.
Without that many obvious names available.
Right. What do you sort of expect? Like, are we going to be in one of those weird holding patterns where all these sort of dink and dunk upgrades that teams can make to their rosters just get shinier and shinier as we go, and then we get to deadline season and we're like, the Mike Matheson sweepstakes? Or are we going to get some real dominoes shaken loose here? What's your expectation?
It's probably the Mike Matheson part, because it's the NHL and we're always promised, especially at every trade deadline, it's like, all of this crazy stuff's going to happen, and then it's actually not that significant and meaningful. It does feel like, maybe this is just because we're experiencing it right now, but doesn't it feel like more teams are on full tilt this early in the season than ever previously? I don't really know what to attribute that to. Like, maybe it's just because we're in it right now, so it's like recency bias, it feels
like
that way.
Like the Sabres commentary about not having palm trees and having high taxes?
Yeah, but even like the Predators and everything they've been going through, obviously the Rangers now, like there's so many teams that are just like, we're open for business.
Even the Canucks at times have felt like they're on full tilt, just given some of the dramatics and some of the extenuating circumstances and, you know, Rick Tocchet apologizing to the fans for like poor performances at home. And it's like, you're a 6:30 hockey team.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rangers do feel like they're on another level, though, where Chris Drury is just like, I need to do something right now.
And he's done a couple things.
Yeah.
But I mean, okay, so power rankings. I'm going to ask you to power rank your top five movers among teams with a shot to win the Stanley Cup between now and the trade deadline. Teams that you think are most likely to deliver meaningful pyrotechnics, not just teams most likely to give up something far too generous to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Marcus Pettersson.
You'd have to put the Rangers number one, just because of the cap space they cleared up and the fact that I don't think they're going to suddenly start winning after all this stuff. Like, they have deep rooted issues with their current personnel. And so as this continues,
isn't there deep rooted issues with their current personnel though? Just like only have two good defensemen.
I don't know, man. The forward, like Mika Zibanejad.
Yeah, the skating is tough.
I really think if he hadn't been included as one of the first six that was announced in June for Sweden,
well,
he might have made it anyways, just because he's such a big name.
I think he still would have made it.
He doesn't deserve it based on the play this year. Like, he has not been good.
I mean, he might be a fourth liner though, who plays power play.
Yeah, all the depth charts I've seen for it, it's like he's there for number one center. It's like under no way he's going to be fourth line wing.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
He's not even going to play down the middle.
Well, it's going to be interesting because it's like, doesn't it feel like both him and Erik Karlsson might end up in like depth roles?
Maybe. I think what Karlsson has working for him is that pretty much every defenseman on that team is left-handed except for him and Rasmus Andersson.
Right.
So I feel like he's probably going to play with like Gus Forsling or something. And if Gus Forsling's on the ice with you, that's first pair minutes.
Sounds pretty great.
Yeah. I think that's probably going to happen for Karlsson. And I think in a better situation, he's still got a lot of juice left. With Zibanejad, though, I mean, you look at the centers on that team, right? Pettersson, and I think that's a huge story here. The fact that Pettersson has refound his form the past 2 or 3 weeks, because that Swedish team has no real players like him in terms of centers, right?
Breaker,
like, it's like William Karlsson, Lasse Lindholm, Joel Eriksson-Ek.
Yeah, good players.
It's like good players that you feel comfortable two-way, but not a game-breaker offensively that's your number one center. And so Pettersson actually gives them that now. So yeah, I think Team Sweden is a really interesting roster.
Yeah, me too. I think they're... So anyway, back to the power rankings.
Okay,
we've got
the Rangers,
one.
Yep.
Or Stars 2.
Stars 2, just because of the hole they created there, right?
Yeah.
And we saw them go in somewhat last year with the Tanev trade. I think they're going to certainly explore that again.
When we were discussing this, there was someone who texted in and was like, what are they going to do with their center depth? And I was like, they still have Stankoven, Johnston.
They have like five top six centers, though.
They're okay.
And it's like
Duchesne.
Yeah, and well, that's what I was. It's like.
And Ben takes all their faceoffs. Like, they're fine.
Yeah, totally. Ben a winger takes all their draws. Yeah, they're loaded.
Stars number two. I don't know if it's just because I'm looking at it on your screen, but the Avalanche feel like an interesting team to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel pretty certain that Scott Wedgwood is not the answer. I don't think they have an appetite to waste another prime MacKinnon and Makar season, especially with Rantanen, I think, legitimately potentially gone this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like there's some real friction there from a contract perspective. And I guess they have to figure out whether they can use the Landeskog money or not. But they have so many moving parts that I feel like they might get aggressive even before the deadline.
So that's three, four.
Do you just have to put Vegas in there because they're Vegas?
Yeah, they're involved in everything. They're definitely adding a star player.
They're adding a star player.
Yes.
Even though there are no star players available, they'll find a way.
They'll manufacture one.
And then five? Can I suggest one for you?
Yeah.
What about Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have the financial flexibility and the resources in terms of prospects and picks to facilitate pretty much any player they want to add.
And I think the appetite. Yes. Like, I think the days of Carolina lets every expiring free agent walk and never really buys at the deadline. Like, I just feel like we're not seeing a significant change to that, but I do think we're going to see it tweak to be slightly more a slightly more aggressive version of it than it.
Well,
than
they're also clearing because Burns, Orlov, and then a few of the bid players like Jesper Fast and stuff all come off the books this summer.
Yeah, they're gonna
so
have
they pretty much have a
space.
Clean slate. So actually, a UFA to be. Is kind of appealing for them because it just adds even more money that they have to play with this summer.
For sure.
It is Canucks talk. Thank you, Dimitri, for stopping by.
No draft today.
That was kind of a draft today. That was kind of a draft.
It was a power ranking.
Yeah, maybe. You know what? I liked it. It was fun. Yeah.
Way to flex.
It actually had something to do with hockey, which is great.
Another good pivot. Wow.
Let's go.
It is Canucks talk. Thank you to Dimitri for stopping by. Appreciate it, Rash. Thank you, Lena, for producing the show. Thank you to Thomas Drantz. I am Josh Elliott Wolf. We'll be back together Monday, Tuesday next week before Jamie is back for the rest of the week. This has been Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.